The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
And new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world, Michael the Count Bisping.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Believe you me, we're back. What's up, kid? Let's see. Is it coffee or tea? Coffee or tea? I think that's tea. That looks like a some British.
Tea.
I know.
It's tea. Sorry, pardon me. A terrible, very unprofessional start to the show. You just said, let's go. I was mid-sip. You know what I mean? And as an Englishman with my cup of tea, Lewis, I will not. Nothing will separate me from a sip of my tea.
I like to test you. I like to just right in the middle of it, just say go and just see what's going to happen. See how you react. That's how we get the best out of Michael Bisping.
It is. It is. Just throw me into the deep end. The pressure. Ooh, I'm mid-sip and we've started. What will I do? Welcome to the show, everybody. Bit of a bizarre intro, I must say. Lewis, we were just talking off air. Seems like I get around New York City on a skateboard. 12-year-old Luis J. Gomez is maturing and you're actually going to buy a car.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, I have to, obviously. I'm moving out to Jersey at the end of the month. And yeah, I got to get a car. I'm looking around at different places, different dealerships. I don't even know the first step. Like, I don't even have a license. I got to get a license before I got to get a car.
I got to say, that might be your first step. That's your first port of call. Get yourself a license, get yourself legal, then you can drive. But if you had a car from where you're going to move to get to the city, let's say to get to the studios, how long is that going to take you?
Half an hour.
Half an hour. Okay, that's not bad.
No. It's not bad at all. Yeah, I'm aware. And then there's public transportation too. So I could take the train and the bus. There's a lot of different options, but I want to have a car. It's been a long time. The last time I had a car, I was 18 years old. And it was like, I just always had the shittiest cars you could possibly buy. Like whatever you could buy, find like $1,000. Like I owned like three or four cars between the ages of 16 and 18 or 19. And they were all just $1,000 hunk of shits. Brakes gone. Like just literal death traps that I should not have been driving around.
I don't know. I feel like all young drivers should start with that kind of car, to be honest. You know, you shouldn't go in and
no brakes.
Well, you should have brakes. You want to be legal. You want to have its has to have its MOT. You guys in America don't have an MOT system, do you?
You mean like an inspection?
Yeah, every year it has to pass its MOT to make sure it's safe to be on the roads. You guys don't have that here.
We do have that. I think it's less than every year, though. I think it's once every few years, if I'm not mistaken. But
as
for
a driver, speaking to the non-driver, I'm pretty sure you guys don't have that system.
I'll bet you one of your watches, or I'll bet you your Audi versus my piece of hunk of shit that I'm about to buy.
What kind of car are you going to buy, Lewis? What are we going for here? What are we saying?
I haven't decided, but you know, we used to, when there was a garage around the corner from where I grew up that all of like our family members, it was so shitty, like, but everyone in the town knew that you take it there to pass inspection. If you had a shit car, you paid him an extra like $50. And this guy would illegally pass your car for inspection. So that's how I know that we have inspections.
Okay, well, maybe you do. Or maybe there was nothing wrong with your car. Maybe it would have passed inspection anyway, but he's like, I'll just take an extra $50. But what kind of car are you looking for? Because you told me off air, and I want to hear you say the words, because I got rid of the Maserati and got myself a beautiful Audi. And I just get ridiculed from you all the time for driving a subpar vehicle. But let me tell you, Audis are one of the best cars on the road. But please, what kind of car?
I was looking at Audis, but that's not the only car that I'm looking at. I was looking at Audis, but the other problem is I can't get the. I was looking at Range Rovers, but I can't get the same type of car as you. I need to separate myself from Michael Bisping a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, if you go and get yourself a Range Rover and an Audi and just have a spare Honda on the driveway just for shits and giggles, yeah, that's going to be a little bit weird. You know, people always comment about that on my Instagram. The other day, I think Callum was hitting pads and somebody mentioned because the cars are on the driveway, obviously, yeah. And there's a Honda. They're like, oh, look at that. Who's driving the Honda? It's like, yeah, my 19-year-old son, he doesn't drive a $100,000 Range Rover. You know, he's 19. Yeah. He also doesn't even have his fucking license yet.
Yeah, well, that's crazy. But it's funny that, like, of course, you're 100% right about that. But that's an appropriate car. A Honda Accord, a Honda Civic, you know, a few years old. It's got some miles on it. The reality is they're going to be an idiot. They're going to crash it into some fucking, you know, parked car at the mall at one point. They're going to scratch it up. They're going to do stupid things in it. So you want to teach them the responsibility with that. But yeah, I don't know. I want something nice. Now that I'm older, I was thinking about getting an Audi. And then we were talking about the news. And I don't know, Bisping, you might have to get rid of your Audi because of the news you told me. I don't know the way that you're perceived right now, but Audi's in a little bit of hot water.
No. Well, Audi might be in hot water for me if they don't handle this situation very, very delicately. maybe Brian in post, you can put this up for us. But there's an image. Audi's apologized for showing an advert showing a little girl leaning on a car whilst eating a banana. The advert was shared online promoting the Audi RS4 Avant and attracted criticism from some social media users who described it as creepy, sexually suggestive, and strange, alongside the ad slogan, which reads, "Let your heart beat faster in every aspect." The youngster is pictured with her back against a high-performance car while eating the fruit. Its official Twitter account said, "We hear you and let's get this straight. We care for children. We sincerely apologize for this insensitive image and ensure it will not be used in the future." And I'm sorry. I am very sorry, but that is fucking ridiculous. If you are the type of person, if you are of that persuasion to see an advert, a commercial of a cute little girl leaning against a car in that cute little dress, eating a banana, and see nothing more. If you see anything more than a cute little girl leaning against a car eating a banana, then you have a problem. If you're seeing something sexual there, or if you're seeing other than a little girl eating a piece of fruit, then you need to go and see a psychiatrist, because I don't see anything sexually inappropriate with that whatsoever.
Yeah, you're just, the only thing you're doing this keto thing. So you're seeing a banana. Your mind's in different places. You're just like, you're freaking out. Like, your mind, you got to see it from the perspective of pedophiles. You understand?
I'm like, that would put me right over my carb limit for the day. This girl's out of control. She's crazy. What is she doing? Throwing caution to the wind. She's so reckless.
The problem is this, right? Like, so Audi and all these mainstream companies, like, as soon as they sniff any sort of like, oh my God, we have to apologize for something, they bend the knee so quickly. And anybody else, rational people are going like, what are you talking about? There's nothing sexual. People are seeing the image, obviously, at home right now. It literally couldn't be any less sexual. I'd understand if it was more suggestive. I would understand it if it was a suggestive
image. The girl was like 16, she was leaning over the bonnet. One leg was kicking up at the back. She had a tiny little mini skirt on and she's looking back whilst munching on the banana. Come take this for a ride. Okay.
Two chocolate covered bananas.
Audi, I get it. You're European, you're German. Sex is, prostitution's legal. Donkerschön. Okay, it's wunderbar. I get it. That's a little too much, though, for the international market, Audi. Peel it back a bit. Hold on, that sounds like the banana skin. Wind it back a bit, dial it back. But no, that's a little girl. This is political correctness gone crazy, just like the world. This is the world we're living in, and it's depressing. I love Audi. Audi, they're some of the best cars on the market, on the road, Lewis. So I strongly advise getting one. But come on, Audi. I would. Have some balls.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me. Remember a few, like maybe it was maybe 2 years ago, there was, I want to say H&M or one of these companies, maybe the Gap even, they had a little shirt and it was like, it was a little black kid. And on the shirt, it said like cutest monkey in the jungle or something like that on it. It was something just so not offensive, nothing. And people, woke people started freaking out going, that's racist. And you're like, if you're seeing that, you're the racist person.
Yeah, no. Well, yeah, I mean, I agree. I understand a little bit, I guess. But people are just trying to find fake outrage wherever they go. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, in this day and age, if you're looking around for it, there's so many groups and there's so many you know, categories that you can help people in. These people want to pigeonhole everything these days. And if you say something that seems like it's related to one of those categories, then you might be in a world of shit. You might be in a world of pain. So you just got to be careful. You got to tread lightly, Louis. It's a fucking minefield out there, doggy.
It's sad. The problem is we shouldn't have to tread lightly. We should all understand that people make mistakes regularly, that people read into things regularly, and you go, okay, you move on. You sort of come to a compromise and an agreement. And we've been doing this for, at this point, human beings have existed for thousands thousands of years, and we've been able to come together and to come to this agreement. But right now it seems to be we are more divided than ever, whereas we should be more united than ever. We now have technology and we can communicate. I could talk to somebody halfway across the world and share an idea instantly, but for some reason we're now completely divided as a culture, and it seems like a crazy time. But you said something interesting there, which is like you can find, if you're looking for it, you could find it. Right. If you're looking for to be upset or angry, remember when John Jones was he walking through a store recently? And I guess he got mad because they had Negro was like which is black in Spanish. And it was on the T-shirt. Remember,
I vaguely remember this.
Yeah. And you're like, and then he posted a whole video about it. And then I guess people started like trashing me like, dude, it just means black in Spanish. And he was like, I don't care. And he kind of put his foot down anyway. It didn't matter. But it's like, that's a great example of how people are looking for things regularly to be upset about.
Yeah. But to be fair, I kind of get his point on that one. If you're not fluent in Spanish, which he clearly isn't, and you see that and you're like, well, whoa, that does upon face value look like an inappropriate shirt. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's not his fault. He's not fluent in a number of languages. How many languages do you speak, Lewis?
Well, did he think it was like, oh, well, this is the Negro shirts. These are the white person shirts. These are the yeah, exactly, Asian shirts. It's exactly. Crazy.
See, the fact of the matter is that even this, got to tread carefully because, you know, it's like you're making light of it, which we're not. I just saw that commercial about Audi cars and I just couldn't believe it. I was just scrolling through Twitter yesterday and I see that and I think, wow, what is the world coming to? It's sad. It's a sad state of affairs in a certain way. I mean, I'm happy that people are sensitive to other people's feelings, that the world has evolved in terms of, you know, acceptance, in terms of, you know, whatever gender you want to be, whatever sexual preference, fine, fill your boots. You do you. I couldn't care less. But like, like, as you say, you have got to be careful what you say. And if sometimes you might be having just a perfectly honest conversation or a meaning well conversation, but one word just taken out of context could tip the balance. And then all of a sudden now you're in the wrong.
Yeah. The fact that even Audi, the article you sent me, like it was a mistake. Audi apologized, this quote unquote, it was a mistake. Audi apologizes over car advert. Like, Audi is a car company. Who's apologized? What are we even doing here? Like, why does a company, it's not a human being, it's not a person. Like, was there a person who made the decision on the staff? It's just such a silly, weird thing. And I get why Audi does it as a company. They go on the marketing team, they go, oh, cool, just apologize. I think a lot of the times when these things happen, I think they do it on purpose. And they do it to sort of kick up some dust. They get some free advertisements because there's some articles written about them. And what they do is they act accordingly and they go, oh, I apologize. Not a problem. And then everyone goes, look, good. They apologize. Yep. That's great. So half the time, I think when you see companies get in trouble for shit like this, I think it's a marketing thing behind the scenes.
No, you're out of your mind. Out of your conspiracy theories. They're trying to protect the data, right? No, it's not. They fucked up. Listen, whatever, we're not getting into that. Sheep, you're a sheep. Believe everything you read. Listen, they picked a fucking an advert of a girl eating a banana and they thought it looked like a family image. I thought it looked like a family image also. Unfortunately, there's some fucking crackpots out there. Audi, grow a set of balls. That's what I say, grow a set of balls. I like driving your cars, but I don't like seeing how weak you are. I don't see how you fold to it's any kind of pressure. Just
Chevy
have a backbone.
Chevy wouldn't have folded. Chevy would have doubled down.
Fucking racist Chevrolet drivers. Don't get me started on the Chevy guys. I know nothing about Chevrolet, by the way. If there is any kind of scandal there, I don't know what I'm talking about. All right. We are an MMA show. We do have Sugar Sean O'Malley, rising bantamweight, hot prospect, big star. I was going to say star in the making, but I think he's already a star. He's joining us very shortly. It is Thursday. We are going to do a hammer fisting with Harrington. He's going to fill in some points for us later, but we're going to go through a few of these notes. Harrington, as usual, did a great job. Where should we start? I saw this. Number one, Paulo Costa just dropped the weirdest shit-talking video of all time. And I didn't see what was so weird about it, Harrison. Why is that so weird? I saw people talking about that. Can we play the video? And yeah, why is it so weird?
Well, in the video, it depicts Paulo Costa looking like Ricky Martin, and he made Israel Adesanya a woman. And in the original Ricky Martin video, he's trying to seduce her the whole time. It's like, are you trying to fight him or make out with him? What's going on here?
Yeah. No, I'm watching it now. This isn't the one that I saw. This is a little weird. In fact, it's very weird. It's incredibly weird. I hope you show this in post, Brian. But yeah, so he's got Izzy face swapped onto a woman's body. I don't know what's going on. You're right, Hamilton. I'm watching this. It's very sexually suggestive. You know what I mean?
Ooh. Very hard to masturbate to. We did. We had a competition, me, Brian, and Harrington.
You got the job done.
So you can last the longest. And that was that. Yeah, it's bizarre. You know, I don't know the Brazilian sense of humor. Maybe that's what it is. Like, this might be like in Brazil, they're like, oh my God, this is the fucking craziest shit talking ever. But yeah, here, yeah, this is like, dude, I don't know.
There's a culture barrier for us. You know what I mean? I mean, they're into salsa. They do the fucking Mardi Gras down there. Do you know what I mean? Maybe this is like very uber macho stuff.
Yeah. Izzy also is really disturbing as a woman. Like, he looks like a crackhead woman. Like, as a woman, he looks like just like
what's he called? Pookie off New Jack City. Oh God. Yeah, no, that's weird. That is a bit weird, but I tell you what, that fight is gonna be amazing. I cannot wait for that fight. We got some big fights coming up. Obviously at the weekend, Derek Lewis and Olenek. Next week, DC Stipe 3. It's fucking bananas. And then of course Adesanya and Costa coming up. That's gonna be an incredible fight. But yeah, fair play to Barcina for keeping things interesting there. All right, listen, you're sick of it. You're looking at everyone. You're on Instagram. They're all working out. They're going for runs. You know, they're mountain biking and getting lost perhaps in the middle of the night. Well, you want to do your bit. You want to get in shape. You want to burn some calories. You want to release some endorphins. You don't want to feel like a fat slob. But as you heard on the last episode with Lewis's endeavors into a home gym, it can be very, very expensive. Oh, guess what? Here's one of the most simplest, easiest, and cheapest forms of exercise known to man, known to boxers, known to professional athletes all over the world. What is it, Lewis? What's it called?
It's called skipping rope.
Yeah, well, it's called skipping.
It's called skipping.
If you're not Mr. Literal or Captain Obvious, yeah, it's called skipping. Otherwise, it's jumping rope, jump rope, cross rope, in fact, is what we're talking about, guys. Tell them about the product, Lewis.
Hell yeah, cross rope. It's not a Mountain Dew commercial.
Just tell them about the product.
Look, cross rope is really an incredible, I would say revolutionary product that makes jumping rope easy, and it makes it, you jumping in right away, less intimidating. The way they do it is they have weighted ropes, so the different weights, they have different exercises, everything from strength exercises to cardiovascular exercises, but the weighted ropes actually makes it a little bit easier. And you download a great app, they have all these different programs, so you follow this program, you watch your diet, you watch what you're eating, and it's a fast, fun, easy way to lose weight.
Yeah, this is a very efficient cardio workout. And with cross rope, as you said, with the handles, with the different weights, with the speed ropes, with the adjustments, with the app that they have, you can track everything. So it just got even better. Get your heart rate up while working your core, your back, your shoulders, arms, glutes, and more. I'll tell you what the more is. It's the mind and body coordination, Lewis. You've got to think about it. There's a little bit of technique to it, a little bit of skill. And you get really good feedback because the better you get, you can go faster. And then you start, you know, making your skipping or your jump rope exercises a little more intense. You start doing a little crossy cross, you start doing a little double jump. You know, there's many, many different variations, but I do recommend it very, very highly. As I said, one of the oldest exercises out there, certainly for any combat sports athlete. Give it a try. As we say, there is an app on there. You can track your calories burned, things like that, the amount of time, the amount of jumps, etc., etc. Dive into the world of cross rope. You will not be disappointed. Lewis, tell them about the offer.
All you got to do right now is go to crossrope.com/believe. That's crossrope.com/believe. And you get up to $40 off your cross rope set plus free shipping when you check out. All you got to do, once again, crossrope.com/believe. Use that URL. Let them know that we sent you. And yeah, get going.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to add one last time. It's super easy. You order the ropes, obviously, then you download the app and you can choose between their Get Lean program, their Get Strong program, depending on what your fitness goal, or get the best value for both sets with the Get Fit bundle. Try the workouts and see a map of your progress on the free CrossRope app. Yeah. Anyway, let's get back into it.
All right, Mike, real quick, you know what we should talk about? I thought this was kind of interesting because times are changing. Let's get real, right? Luis Pena, Tim Elliott, and Jamal Hill all have been suspended due to marijuana use. This matter is only being handled by the NSAC, not by USADA. And this is under the Nevada State Athletic Commission guidelines. The maximum punishment is a 9-month suspension. Something that Tim Elliott cannot get behind. This is a quote from Tim Elliott. But first, before I give that Tim Elliott quote, what do you think of this? Three different guys tested positive for marijuana. You're an old school guy. You know, the rules are the rules, but...
Whoa. Listen, don't put words in my mouth. I'm not for this. I don't want people losing their jobs over because they're smoking the herb, man. They're hitting a little bit of wacky-backy, right? Okay, I don't give a fuck if you smoke a bit of weed. And certainly... A couple of things, Tim Elliott, you're about to explain. He took the fight on short notice. Well, if marijuana stays in your system for a month, I think it is, right? He's not going to smoke a joint 2-3 weeks ago, and that's going to have any kind of impact on his performance in the cage. Secondly, the Nevada State Athletic Commission handed that down. Well, it's legal to buy in the state of Nevada as well. So, I mean, I get it. You couldn't. What would happen if you went into a cage drunk? I don't know. Is there any rules against that?
I don't think that they have, there's no test for it, right? So they're not testing your blood alcohol. I believe my understanding would be that if a physician or if the referee noticed that you were under the influence, they probably wouldn't let you compete. I couldn't imagine them letting you compete. With weed, I mean, look, you hear the only side of it where I've heard where there's any logic at all where you can say it's a performance enhancement drug is that in terms of recovery, we talk about the benefits of CBD all the time, right? And THC and CBD, it does make you recover faster. If you're getting stoned as a painkiller, is there something there? I don't think so. I think it's more of a detriment. If people are getting stoned, high-level athletes, it will probably slow you down and make you not as fast and sharp, if I had to guess, but to each his own.
Well, I mean, I'm no expert on weed as such, but people do say that, you know, there is an anxiety issue and maybe it would help with the pre-fight nerves and things like that. And I know a lot of people, like Eddie Bravo, I read his book back in the day, and they were talking about how they would get stoned before rolling jiu-jitsu, and they get way more creative, you know what I mean? And their mind, you know, they see more openings for things, and you meditate, you
sort of get into a different mindset. When I smoke before I go for a run, for sure. I get stoned, go on a run, my mind just sort of wanders. I stop thinking about running after a little while. I'm thinking about fucking purple dragons chasing me through the sky. Who knows? It's great. So I get it. But performance enhancement is a little bit crazy. We do have Sean O'Malley. Sugar Sean O'Malley is joining us right now.
What's up, guys?
What's up, Sean? How are you, buddy?
Doing good. How are you guys?
We are good, man. We're good. Thanks for taking the time to join us, Sean. We really appreciate it. Know you got a big fight next week. Time is probably very sacred right now, so we appreciate it, bud.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, not too much going on today. Mostly a recovery kind of day, busting out some interviews and stuff. And I enjoyed doing this stuff, especially with you know, guys like yourself. So thank you.
My man. Hey, Sean, just real quick before we start talking to you, we were just discussing there three guys, Tim Elliott, Luis Pena, and Jamal Hill, just got suspended up to 9 months for smoking weed. Some of those guys took the fights on short notice, you know what I'm saying? So it was in their system for a while. And obviously, we know you like a good smoke and you're an advocate for it. What do you make of that? What's your stance on that real fast?
Yeah, it I don't know what to think about it. It's crazy that that's even an issue that we have to deal with in 2020 right now. So it's unfortunate for those guys, especially the ones that took it on short notice. Because I know, you know, Vegas, even they allow a little bit, a certain amount. I don't know what it is, but I know it's a little bit in your system. But really, I mean, for me, at least a good 14 days usually does the trick. And so it sucks for those guys that took it on short notice.
Well, what about you? Because we were just having a discussion sort of, do you see weed having any benefits as a performance enhancement drug, or do you see it more as maybe even a deterrent towards your performance?
I think everyone's different. I don't see it any different than someone using protein. You know what I mean? It's like protein can be considered a performance enhancing drug. Caffeine can be a performance. I think it just should be in one of those categories. It's you know what I mean? So I think it's absolutely ridiculous. And I think with time, it'll be completely fine. And this will all be looked at as completely just stupid.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, Sean. I never thought of that. Because as you say, caffeine, I mean, come on, that is definitely a stimulant. My day fucking start until I got three coffees in. And then I'm like a fucking psycho. I wake up all grumpy. Louis can attest to it. Then I have three coffees. I'm full of beans. I'm working out. I'm doing shit. That's exactly. Because I'm off my face on caffeine.
People don't get – that's what people – I don't understand when people are, you know, they're against marijuana. I'm like, you drink coffee every morning. You know, to me, they're the same thing, but a little bit opposite. They're both mind altering substances. They're just, you know, some people enjoy both. Some people enjoy one or the other, but yeah, it's crazy to me.
Do you ever smoke before you train?
Not in camp, but outside of camp, it's when I do jiu-jitsu. My favorite training session of all time is probably in a gi, smoke a good sativa right before. And doing not necessarily super competitive, but more of a flow, but it's going with good enough partners to where you can't just get away with stupid stuff, but a flow sativa rip is that's my all time favorite practice. If I had to pick one for the rest of my life, I would do that. But in a gi makes it a lot more fun because it makes jiu-jitsu more like chess rather than checkers. And that's probably my favorite training all time is high on a nice sativa.
You know Sean's a pothead because he said sativa.
You're selling it on a nice sativa rib, just a little flow with an experienced guy. I'm like, this sounds like fun. I'm gonna give this a try.
No, yeah, and a gi makes it way more fun. The grips and all the different guards you can play, and you're just doing jiu-jitsu, and it makes it so much more fun. I enjoy no gi a lot more from a competitive like. Let's take some serious caffeine and go after it. But I do enjoy some marijuana and training.
Well, Sean, the last 2 years for you, I mean, they have been crazy years, right? I mean, now you're here in the UFC, you're a massive superstar in the company. Obviously, you had some adversity with the fucking USADA issues. You know, that's all behind you. You had a tremendous knockout just recently at the Apex. Now you got a big fight with Chito Vera next week. I mean, how are you feeling? I mean, how's life for Sugar Sean O'Malley right now?
Yeah, the whole COVID thing was a little crazy. It didn't affect me in any way. I feel like it enhanced my training. As far as I bought my own cage, I put it in a warehouse. The training camp has been super specific. It's more like a boxing. Let's work. Everything's revolving around me. So this training camp has went just as, you know, I think it's went just as good, if not better than any other one. I fought March 7th in Vegas, first round KO, no injuries, get right back into training. I knew I wanted to fight again June 6th. First round KO, no injuries. I knew I wanted to turn around and fight again. So this is back-to-back-to-back training camps, and I feel good. And the thing with me is I'm not overtraining. I mean, right now, a little bit, when you're this far into camp, you almost have to overtrain to get into the certain level you need to be in as far as getting in shape. But I'm eating a perfect diet. I'm sleeping perfect. I'm recovering. I'm doing all my recovery. I have a cold plunge at my house, a hot tub at my house, a sauna. Danny, my girl, she stretches me. We stretch every night. And I'm just doing everything perfect so I can train. I can overtrain without getting injured. And I think Jason Perillo, I think I heard you say it on Rogan, you know, it takes confidence to take a day off. And I think I heard that. When I heard that, I'm like, that's so true. And it really, you know, it resonated with me. And I feel like that's always in the back of my head. So, you know, when I do need to take a day off, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. I mean, just to elaborate on that point, because obviously there's a fine line, right, between saying, you know what, I'm going to take a day off because I'm ahead of the curve. My weight's good. I'm in shape. I'm feeling good. So today I'm going to rest. That takes confidence, but it's also a fine line of being a lazy bastard. Some people might say, you know, I'm going to take a day off. And only the person, only the athlete in question really knows which one he's doing. But as you said, and as Jason said originally, it does take confidence to take that day off.
Yeah. And last, that entire last fight camp, going into fight Eddie, I started your book on Audible and I listened to it every night, and I finished it, I think, like a couple days right before the fight. But it was super, that was a really, really good book. Recommending it to, you know, I've been recommended on my podcast a few times, but yeah, that book got me fired up too. It was sweet.
I never knew you were this smart a man, Sean.
you're saying all the right things for Michael Bisping.
Yeah, I know.
Right,
I'm like, this guy's the best.
No, yeah, that book got me fired up though. Really
thanks, man. I appreciate that. I really do, Sean. Hey, before we get into your upcoming fight, the last time we had you on this show, I was in Atlanta. I was filming a TV show, and I'd had a few day drinks, and then I thought I'll have a couple at the bar. Then I brought a few up to the room for the podcast, and by the time you came on, I was fucking hammered. So I know I've apologized to you via text a few times, but for anyone out there thinking, where is that show? I insisted that it get deleted because when you got off the air and it continued and I was getting more and more drunk, I'm like, yeah, no, this isn't good. This can't go out there. Lewis, what have you got, buddy?
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing that I noticed, I mean, you took 2 years off, which that has to be, you know, crazy. You're taking 2 years off of doing what you love. Do you feel like you have to sort of play catch up now? Is that maybe what's driving you to train so hard?
Yeah, I definitely didn't take 2 years off doing what I love. I did what I loved every single day, which is, you know, training and improving. Right. I didn't get to compete, which is, you know, also another love, is being able to go out there and showcase my skills. But in the back of my head, you know, there was some rough days, like initially when I first got suspended and, you know, we tested all my stuff. It just didn't make sense. I'm like, I don't get it. In the back of my head, I always knew, I'm like, I'm going to be able to fight again. Like, I'm not doing anything illegal. Some people are doing that stuff, they get caught, and then it completely screws their whole career because now they can't do it and their mind's messed up. For me, I never was doing anything in the first place, so I'm like, this isn't going to affect my performance. I'm still going to get better. I know eventually, I was only, I think, 23 at the time. I'm like, I'm going to be able to fight again. I thought it was going to be a lot sooner than it ended up being, a couple days over 2 years. But I really was just grinding every single day. I was getting better, whether it was jujitsu. I actually didn't strike. I hit mitts maybe. You know, because we had a couple fights booked, so we'd hit mitts and do all that. But for the most part, I'd say 90% of that time, I was grappling, getting better at jujitsu, wrestling hard, and grinding, really, just pushing myself. So the 2 years off were definitely a blessing in disguise. You know, you see Edmund just fought Derek Brunson. I think Edmund's 22 years old. You know, he's young. 22 is young. 23 for me was young. I fought Andre Sockerman when I was 23, busted him up. But other than
how old are you now, Sean?
I'm 25. So those 2 years really, and I got a strict strength and conditioning coach before that fight, before I got suspended. I had a strength and conditioning coach. I would do it in camp a little bit here and there. Outside of camp, it was, you know, jujitsu, strike, whatever, that kind of training. But those 2 years, I found a guy named Brandon Harris, and he's actually one of my really good friends now, strength and conditioning coach. And I'm doing that 3-4 times a week, whether they're strength, conditioning, or an active recovery. We're breathing. We're, you know, he's super into the mindfulness, all that. So I think putting on, you could see from my fight in March of 2018, and then I fought March 2020, and you could just see my body's completely different. I put on 8-9 pounds of solid muscle in all the right areas for fighting, and it was really a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, no, and it must have blew your mind then as well when you were about to make your comeback. I think it was International Fight Week, and then they pulled the fucking same shit on you as well. And the mental fortitude, Sean, because a lot of people at that point, because as you say, you weren't cheating, you weren't taking steroids, and then you saw it, I think, kind of validated what you were saying all along, right? I think, but then they threw another fucking suspension on you. I mean, you must have been losing your mind.
I was definitely losing my mind. I remember What helped me kind of stay sane was a lot of journaling. I'm not a writer. I never in school, I hated writing, reading, all that. I definitely didn't do that. But, you know, listening to podcasts, listening to smarter people, neuroscientists, just like people that Rogan has on, and reading the book Tools of Titans, like, and a lot of these top guys in whatever profession they're in, you know, mentioned journaling. They mentioned meditation. I do a meditation practice every single morning when I start my day. Just 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, every single morning. And a lot of that was from going through all that adversity, trying to just get right in the head and be like, how can I be? Because it was hard to be happy when I was getting suspended for something I didn't do. And just so, but like I said, a lot of that ended up being a blessing in disguise. Started journaling, started getting into meditation and kind of figuring out how to move through my subconscious and move through my mind. And really all that has done is helped me perform. I feel like walking out that fight against Jose Quinones, I was so in the moment. I was so present. And I think you could see that in the walkout, in the fight, after the fight. And then again with Eddie Wineland, I feel like it was all that hard work, it showed.
Yeah, it's really interesting you're saying this because me and Bisping have spoken extensively on the show about how as a society, especially young people, your age bracket, because me and Bisping are old men, they don't have any sort of natural built-in meditation. Everyone's obsessed with their phones and they're playing mm-hmm. video games and social media. And there's never any time where you're just sitting there and sort of clearing your mind and just thinking about what is good for you. So I think it's really interesting that you say that, but you're also very great on social media. You've done a great job at sort of creating a real presence for yourself online. You know, talk a little bit about that, because did you spend any time while you were off and not competing? It was probably that was during the time as well where you started getting some real traction online as well.
Yeah, I think I've always had this vision in my head, even before, you know, even as an amateur fighter. I've had a lot of fights. I started kickboxing, like fighting it when I was 16. You know, I've had over 30 fights, and I've always envisioned myself getting in the UFC and becoming a star, being someone that's not just going to get in the UFC, win a couple fights, lose, and not really make a name for themselves. I was like, I knew in my head I was going to get in the UFC, make a name for myself. And then Instagram and all that. I'm just really lucky that I'm in this age group, and I'm at this age where Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, podcasts are, you know, they're blowing up, and it's perfect timing right now for me to blow up with it. But also I feel like I'm pretty good at just being myself, and people resonate with that, and people can see when someone's being themselves and when someone's not. You know, yeah. And I think my fans really are attracted to that, and a lot of them that listen to my podcast. You know, when you do a podcast and you do one every week for an hour or whatever it is, you know, you have to almost be yourself. You can't pretend to be someone every single time you do so. So, you know, it's a lot of talking, a lot of, you know, words to say. So
yeah, no, it definitely is a drag, because I wish I could be somebody else for 90 minutes, but I can't. I try for 5 or 10 and then I fail. Yeah. I fail miserably.
I know, it's hard.
Before we get on to your fight with Chito Vera, I just want to say, because you did the right thing, Sean. I got a lot of respect for what you did, because you had that suspension and you clearly worked on your skill set. And it goes back to what you were saying before. You know, a lot of people, they want to get to the UFC, but sometimes they're not quite ready. And they're learning on the job. Now, I'm not saying you weren't ready. You were discovered on the Contender Series. You looked sensational. But you had that time away. Rather than feeling sorry for yourself, you worked on your skill set. You did a ton of grappling, as you said, and you came back. I mean, your last two fights, you looked fucking sensational. So you can clearly see. I mean, as you said as well, you're only 25 years old. You still got a long career ahead of you. So in a roundabout way, maybe that was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I got to compete in some jiu-jitsu competitions, and that quintet was December of 2019, so it was 3 months before I returned to the UFC. You know, I submitted Takanori Gomi, and I went 8 minutes with Gilbert Melendez, you know, in a draw, and we had a sweet match. Hector Lombard did a straight ankle lock me, which I was okay with. But yeah, I was able to.
That's
grapple.
Pretty good, though. That's pretty impressive grappling credentials there.
Yeah, so it was fun. And I also, you know, I trained with Augusto Mendez. He won ADCC Worlds in 2019. He was the best no-gi grappler in the world at, I think, 145 pounds or whatever, you know, so my weight class-ish. So, you know, I get to learn from him on a daily basis. Like, he's our professor. He's who gave Tim, my coach, his black belt. And we get to learn from that, so there's a lot of confidence going into those matches and fights, knowing who I'm training with.
Real quick, Mike, let's take a moment and thank CBDMD, which is an incredible company, incredible partner for this show. I love their products. CBD in general, you should be taking it because if you have any sort of affliction, whether it's physical, psychological, mental, whatever it is, CBD might be the answer. It is the non-psychoactive chemical in hemp. It does not get you high, but it helps with things like inflammation, anxiety, which I've been taking it for every morning for my anxiety for a while now. And maybe it can help you. I say do a little bit of research and see what CBD can do for you.
Yeah, absolutely. As we know, there's no getting high, no THC in their products whatsoever. Also, as we stress every single time, the best prices per milligram and definitely the best quality CBD on the market. And good news, if you have pets, if you have a dog at home, maybe he's looking a little anxious, maybe he's got sore joints, maybe he's got a bit of arthritis, maybe he's old as fuck and about to die, and you want to make that dog feel a little bit better before he croaks, CBDMD. Buddy, they got the poor CBD. I sent it to Mickey Rourke. Mickey Rourke loved it.
There was first of all, why is Mickey Rourke taking dog CBD? That's a little bit weird, but to each his own. He's a crazy guy. Sometimes he wants to do crazy shit.
He's a little bit out there. He's like, listen, it's edible. It doesn't kill the dog. Maybe it'll work for me. No, his poor old sweetheart, I think it's a chihuahua, was in a lot of pain, and he reached out to me, and CBDMD, fortunately, very kindly gave him a little care package, which really helped out the little pup.
Well, that's very sweet. I don't know. Well, you were having a problem with your dog. He was excreting onto your floors for a while.
Still is.
I don't want to say that CBDMD helped him in his problems, but apparently he's not, because it's still happening every day.
No, that's a really different problem that we'll go into perhaps. It's a hilarious problem to have, but the worst problem as a dog owner, he can't shit. He can't shit, okay? So he squeezes it. Anyways, it's a long story. He's past CBD. The CBDMD is the best CBD on the market. It's the best prices per milligram. It's going to do a lot for you. If you've got insomnia, great. If you can't sleep, if you've got inflammation, anxiety, all that stuff. But if you happen to have an autoimmune response that stops you from taking a shit, your own bloodline, your own DNA is working against you. I'm sorry. The CBD isn't going to help that. But if you haven't got that, which most people haven't, it will help you. Tell them, Lewis, about the great deal.
All you got to do is go to CBDMD.com. Pretty simple. Five letters, CBDMD.com. And use the promo code BYM20 when you check out. That's going to save you 20% off your initial order. Go do that right now. Try CBD. See if it can help out you or your family members, your loved ones. It's a great time to get healthy. CBDMD.com. One more time, that promo code is BYM20. Get 20% off. Okay. Where were we? You mentioned your Twitch channel there. Are you still playing Fortnite, or have you switched over to Warzone like everybody else?
I play Call of Duty. I actually don't play Warzone ever. I play Search and Destroy. Has got my heart. I play a lot of gunfight with we'll do custom matches. But yeah, streaming on Twitch is pretty much a daily thing, hour and a half, 2 hours a day. It's something I really look forward to. It doesn't really get me away from fighting much, because most of the stream is about, you know, fighting, which is totally cool. I figured, you know, that's what I'm known for. I'm
you not chat with the fans and they could ask you questions. And yes, that's awesome. So you end up sort of talking about fighting, keeping, you know, and connecting with the fans at the exact same time.
Yeah, exactly. And on top of all that, you know, they pay you, believe it or not.
There you go. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. I just got affiliated. I literally just got affiliated. Oh,
right on.
So I'm pumped.
Right on.
I got to get involved. Sounds like there's free money to be earned.
Yep.
After your last fight, stunning knockout. Congratulations, by the way. On the same night, you know where I'm going with this. Cody Garbrandt also had a very, very impressive knockout.
A decent knockout.
There you go. I love it. That shit talk you did afterwards, it was so funny. It was very, very subtle. You didn't really take too many digs. But there was definitely a bit of a dig thrown at Cody Garbrandt. Was there any talk whatsoever of that fight being made, or is that still a little too premature right now?
I think it's... What I understand is Dana said, I don't want Sean to beat up Cody, because then who does he fight next? That's what I understand. That's what I took away from it. We don't want Sean to have a limited options of, okay, you can fight number 3, 4, 2, or 1 or whatever. So let's not let him fight Cody yet. I think, you know, Cody's, like I said, it was impressive. He got knocked out cold, not once, not twice, 3 times in a row, comes back, fights a sentence out, and knocks him out. I give respect to Cody there. I think, you know, that's tough to do. I've never been knocked out 3 times in a row, so I can't imagine where his mindset was at. That was probably a huge relief for him. But I'm just and when I say the reason I say what I say is because I see that fight as it's a striking fight. He's not going to take me down, and I'm not going to take him down. He's a boxer. He's going to try to knock me out, and I'm just a better striker. So I think I get the job done in that fight, and then that kind of spitballed into the talk on Twitter, and I enjoy that stuff so much, just as much as I enjoy fighting.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, he's a former champion. He did get knocked out 3 times in a row, though. And as you say, to come back from that one time, I did it one time, and fucking it ain't easy. So 3 times,
yeah,
he does deserve his credit. But as you said, a former champion. And if you had a for him, Dana's absolutely right. You're right there then. You're in title contention. As you said before, you're 25. You're still, you're knocking people out, but you're still getting better. You know, so you've probably still got one or two more fights. I mean, who knows? Maybe your championship material right now, you certainly look like it. But there's no point rushing it just yet. When one, two more fights, then you're right there, and then you cement yourself as hopefully the champion, a dominant champion as well.
Yeah, I definitely plan on, getting the belt and defending it for a while. A lot of people ask me if I'm going up to 45 because I am a bigger bantamweight. And I do plan on, being champs just something that's in the back of my mind, but it's so annoying
because I remember, and this is going to sound like a name drop, but I was on a private jet with Vin Diesel and he was fucking talking to me. I know I sound like a wanker just for saying that, but he's like, yeah, Mike, because Connor was a 2-weight division champion at the time. And he's like, Mike, he's like, dude, all right, so you got one belt. What good is one belt? You need to have two. Do you know what I mean? So these days, having one belt alone isn't enough. Certainly not in Vin Diesel's mind. Go on.
I figured I'll just let Cody drop down to 25, and I hope he beats Figueiredo. Because if he doesn't, if he gets knocked out and then I knock him out, it just doesn't sound as good. But if he goes down to 25, wins the belt, and then I beat him at 35, I'm champ. In my mind, I'm 25 and 35, and I just don't have to make the weight cut. So,
how is that weight cut to 35 for you? What are you at the start of fight week? What do you weigh?
Fight week, I woke up 52 this morning, 152. 52.
So 17 over.
Yeah.
16 over. Still quite significant. So, it's a lot of weight for your weight class.
Yeah, I get it done pretty easy. We're pretty scientific about it. I hired a nutritionist, and will be the third time I've the fight against Jose, perfect weight cut, perfect rehydration. Same with Eddie, and we're doing everything the same right now. So I plan on planning on that being pretty nice. But yeah, I feel like that's a huge advantage for me. Not necessarily weighing more than these guys, because I don't think I will on fight night. I probably will weigh similar, but I have that reach advantage, and it is an advantage when you know how to use it. And for Marlon, he's used to being the taller fighter. He's a little bit shorter than me, not much. He's got a little bit, I think he's got a 3-inch reach disadvantage from me. But I know for me, if I spar someone that's taller than me and longer than me, it's a different game. It's a different fight than if someone's, and then if you're longer than someone. So I think that's really going to give him trouble this fight, not being used to being the shorter guy.
So talk to us about what's the prediction for this fight against Marlon Chito Vera? And then also just maybe give us a little bit of a prediction for the next year or so for Sean O'Malley. How do you see the next year going?
Yeah, this is an interesting matchup. Chito's never been finished. And I think he's had over 10 UFC fights. So, that alone, and he's 6-0 in his last 6 fights with 5 finishes. That last fight was a decision win in my eyes and a lot of people's eyes. So, he's got 5 finishes in his last 6 fights and he's never been finished. So, being able to go out there and put him away in spectacular fashion, which is always it's always kind of what I envision in my head. Not because I want to, or I think it looks good. I just, my fighting style and the skills I bring to the table is just, that's just how the fights end up. So I do plan on knocking him out. I know he's tough, but he doesn't get hit on the chin. He gets hit on the top of the head, the forehead. I hit people on the chin. I'm fast and I'm accurate, and it's the punches you don't see, and that's how I knock people out. So I definitely plan on putting him away in the first or second round. I know he is tough, so I'm ready for 15. But as far as the next year or so, I am just super focused on this fight. I know, and it's hard to predict what's after this fight. Knowing what can happen during fights, how many crazy things can happen. I could go out there, get knocked out, and then not fight for 6 months. So it's hard to say. If everything goes right, I go out there, knock Chito out. I get that Cody fight. I knock Cody out. I call out Peter, and I knock Peter out. And I know TJ Dillashaw is coming back, and I'd love to knock him out. So I got a lot of people I'd like to knock out.
Yeah, I think if you beat, or when you beat, hopefully in style, you know, even though he's a teammate of mine, you can't fucking choose the right words. Not may the best man win.
Yeah, there you go. That's the truth.
There you go. There you go. If and when you win, though, I mean, that is a solid jump up in competition. I'm sure you've seen what some of the haters on Twitter said. Say, oh, he hasn't fought anybody yet. Mm. I think that's a really good natural progression for you because Chito Vera is a good fighter with a good record, as you said, lots of finishes. And then when you go out there, hopefully for you, you get a great performance. Then, yeah, I think that is the natural progression then to those names in the top five and, you know, talking about title eliminators. I mean, is that how you see this going?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, I'm not saying co-main because I look at all my fights as a main event. We're the first main event on a double main event card. We got Stipe and DC on the second main event after our main event. So I think it's a legendary card to be a part of. And I plan on just, you know, being electric and exciting and doing what I do. And I think, you know, if you have three first round knockouts in a row in spectacular fashion, I feel like I'm going to be able to call the shots unless Cody really does want to go down to 25. Like I said, I hope he does. I hope he goes down to 25 and beats Figueiredo. That makes my job easier. I don't have to cut to 25 to be champ. I'll just beat up Cody at 35 while he's the champ at 25. And that's how that will work.
Very cool. Bisping, unless you have anything else specifically you wanted to ask, I want you to plug your podcast, which is blowing up. Everyone's talking about the Sugar Show.
Yeah, I just want to ask real quickly about that. So the guy that you do your podcast with, and I apologize, Sean, what's his name? Because I see you with him all the time. I saw you on Rogan. I think he's maybe your jiu-jitsu coach or something. Obviously seems like a very close friend and a brother to you. And you're very lucky to have somebody like that you're sharing this journey with that truly has your best interests at heart. Because in mixed martial arts, there's a lot of vultures, even in coaches and managers. There's a lot of fucking scumbags out there. But for you to go through this, and I see you with him a lot, you know, and it's beautiful to see.
Yeah, his name's Tim Welch. He's the other guy on our podcast, the Timbo Sugar Show. He's the reason I moved down to Arizona. He's also from Montana. We're both from Montana, but we didn't know each other. Montana's super small in population. There's no good gyms down there at all. He moved down to Phoenix because his girlfriend did, and he was on Bellator Fightmaster. So he was looking at gyms to train at. He found Benson Henderson trained at the MMA lab in Phoenix. So he came down and he was training. A couple years into that, he went back to Montana to commentate some local fights where he was from. And I was on that card. And I armbarred this wrestler. I was 18 years old. This kid was a college wrestler. And I knew a triangle and an armbar off my back. Ended up armbarring this kid after the fight. Tim's like, hey, dude, you have a lot of potential. If you want to come train at a real gym, like a legitimate gym, you're more than welcome to come and stay on my couch for a couple of days and try it out. I called him the next day, ended up driving down or flying down, trained for 10 days, had the worst time of my life, got beat up the worst than I've ever been beat up. Flew back to Montana, saved up $2,000, drove down, and Tim and I got an apartment. And he's been my head coach. He was fighting still at the time for the last four. He was fighting for, you know, every time I had a fight coming up, he would switch roles and he would be head coach. He'd hold mitts for me. He would, you know, we would train together because he was still fighting at the time. And just recently he's kind of been stopped fighting. And now he opened up his own jiu-jitsu school and he's my head coach. So,
That's great, man.
Been nice. It's been good having that consistency there. He's been at all my pro fights. You know, and it's a good chemistry. He knows we have so many little code words, so many call outs, and he knows my striking. He knows my jiu-jitsu. We roll, we compete together all the time. So he knows my game just as well as I know my game. And that's like having extra eyes for me outside the cage. And he doesn't work with any other fighters. It's me and him. And then, whoever our training partners are. So I'm super lucky to be able to be
working with him. So lucky, because this journey of being a fighter, it's a lonely road. It's a lonely journey. And even, you know, I was lucky towards the end of my career, I found Jason Perillo, who was like, you know, like a brother and a mentor to me. But for the longest time, you know, you're by yourself. And I used to love it when I'd have a training camp and Kendall Grove from Hawaii would come over and he'd stay with me and just have somebody to sit in the car with, you know, the mundane shit, driving to and from the gym, just having somebody there with you that you can talk to, or when you're down or when you're low, your energy's low, he can pick you up, and then vice versa and things like that. So it's very, very lucky. Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, Tim, Sean, what the fuck am I saying? can't wait for your fight next week against Chito Vera. Thanks for joining us today, mate. Really appreciate it. And yeah, we're going to get you on after you, hopefully you win. Yeah. I got to choose my words carefully because I'm going to have Perillo call him and say, what the fuck are you saying? Hopefully you win. And I'm sorry, Chito. And I'm sorry, Sean, but may the best man win.
Yeah, no, totally. That's how fighting goes. May the best man win. At the end of the day, we shake hands. And to me, it's you know, the shit talking and all that's all... I mean, I don't know if you noticed, my hair is fading like Chito's chin, but I got the Ecuadorian flag in the hair. Hey. I got the yellow, the blue, the red. So
yeah, I see there's definitely a Takeshi 6'9 vibe going on these days.
Takeshi.
I don't know. I'm old, man. I don't know about this shit. John, you're the man, buddy.
Thank you, guys. I'll definitely have to get on after the fight. Thank you, guys, and have a good day.
No, thank you, Sean. Appreciate it, and all the best.
Sean O'Malley. Peace, boy.
Thanks,
very,
buddy.
Very smart guy.
That
Sean O'Malley. Really just very young. Usually you get a young guy, successful. They're just douchebags and they're not that smart and they just think they know everything. I liked having that conversation with him. I don't know what happened last time. I don't remember the conversation flowing as well as that one did.
Asshole last time. I was a bit tipsy. I just wasn't a very good podcaster. I was drunk, but no, you're right. That's the thing that jumped off the page to me. Definitely an intelligent guy. And believe it or not, in such a brutal sport like mixed martial arts, it is a thinking man's game. It really is. And that will set you apart. Even boxing, you got to be smart in there.
One of the things that he was talking about that I thought was kind of interesting that I figure you can maybe, you know, expand on a little bit more, get your perspective on, was just sort of him going like, well, you know, this 2 years off was a time where, not off, but where it was a real time to grow. And I was going to ask him, but it's sort of the conversation flowed away. But what do you think about not having the competition to sort of drive that desire to train hard? Because there's no way if you're not, especially high level UFC caliber fights, the, you know, toughest people in the world, that motivation, I mean, you're fighting for your life. So there's probably nothing more motivating than having to prepare for that. But just to sort of stay in that mindset and to really push yourself to get better during that time period off, just give me your perspective on that, because I thought it was sort of interesting.
Yeah, no, because I did want to talk to him about that, but I didn't want it to seem like I was pondering on these USADA suspensions too much, because you know what I mean? Obviously, you got to be delicate with that kind of conversation. He was innocent. He was proven innocent, and rightly so. But still, as you say, for a young man like that, you make it to the UFC, you discovered on the Contender, and then it's taken away from you. Certainly, as we know now, he was innocent as well. There's got to be a lot of frustration there. And lesser people, you know, would have gone away and thought, well, fuck it, I'm suspended for a year. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to go and party. I'm going to go live the life, because he's got the fame already. You know, he's got the fame, but he wants the money.
Got that Twitch channel, baby.
He's got that Twitch, whatever. But it would have been easy to kind of go off the deep end and start living like a superstar, especially as a young man. And then when that happened the second time, I mean, Jesus Christ, you could have been forgiven if you said, you know what, fuck this sport. I'm going to go do something else. But no, he did the right thing. He worked on his skill set, because as I say, you know, he looked great on the Contender. He had a great win and he had a couple of wins inside the UFC, but still, you still got a long way to go. And so he used that time away to get even better. I mean, in his last two fights, his striking looked absolutely sensational. He's putting people away very, very easily. And if he can get Chito Vera out of the way, who's fucking hard to finish, he's a very, very well-rounded, highly skilled martial artist, then that's a big, big name on his resume. And it will only be big names after that as well. So yeah, thanks again to Sugar Sean O'Malley. And that is a tremendous fight next week. Can't wait for that one.
Yeah, very excited to see what happens there. And yeah, it does seem like he's one of the guys who, whatever it is, you don't got to even be too in tune to what the UFC is doing. You could tell they want this guy to be a star. There's just something in the air, and you could just tell they were like, keep on winning, Sean O'Malley, because if you do, the sky's the limit. He really does have a lot of potential to be a massive, massive star.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at the way he talks there. You know what I mean? He holds a conversation. A lot of the times you ask someone a question. We weren't even really asking questions, just having a conversation. A lot of time it can get a little hard sometimes. You have to ask them a question and they'll give you a short answer. You know, and the fact that he was able to elaborate on all the answers and stuff, he's a smart dude. He's a thinker's man. You know, he knows what he's doing in there. So, yeah, he's going to have a bright future. Very, very, very bright future.
There was another, as it relates to what he was saying as well, I thought it was sort of interesting. Just when he said that, I know I didn't cheat. So the mental thing where like I don't need this thing. It's not like that's being taken away and sort of that crutch is now gone. Like, I know I wasn't cheating. So I thought that was sort of an interesting take as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway,
I got bad news for you. 2 out of 3 guys are going to experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they are 35. Lewis, you know this all too well. Well, here's the good news. With today's advancements in science, Keeps offers proven treatments that can combat the symptoms of hair loss and help you keep the hair that you have. And here's the kicker. Here's the really good part. At half the cost of your local pharmacy, Lewis.
That's amazing. People are trying to save money right now. Everyone's trying to save money right now. And the reason they can make it cheaper, I'll tell you right now. Number one, they do it super simple. You do it all online. There's no like in-person doctor's visit, which is great for quarantine as well. And then they send everything directly to you. So they're cutting out all the middlemen. And I'm going to tell you right now, Keeps really works. I wish I would have heard about Keeps when I was 18 years old, because I started losing my hair when I was 18 years old. I started shaving it immediately. I had to live this lifestyle of being a mixed martial arts fan, because this is the look, right? I wish I could have found out about it. I would be so much less of a meathead had I not had to start shaving my head at 18 years old.
Well, the look would have been a mohawk with a lot of bad tattoos and constantly wearing tap-out shirts, maybe Ed Hardy, maybe just walking around calling everyone, bro, what's up, bro, and acting like a general meathead. Yeah, that would have been the look, but that isn't the look today, thank God. And your look doesn't have to be one that is bald. It doesn't have to be one that is balding, that has the hair patch, that maybe you've started wearing hats. Maybe you've gone to the dark side like a complete wanker and you're regularly wearing a fedora. Maybe it's a beanie. Maybe it's a sun hat. Whatever the hat is, there's no need to do that with Keeps. No, find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors. In fact, nearly 1,000 men trust Keeps for the hair loss prevention medication.
You are the former champion, but nearly 1,000 men is not a lot of men.
Is it not? It's kind of, I don't know, regular, you know, it's, is that what it says though? That's what it says. Right?
100,000 men.
Oh, hey, even better. I was impressed at 1,000. I was like, 1,000 regular loyal customers. They've got 100,000. Hey, it must be good. They have more subscribers to the hairless medication than we have subscribers to this goddamn podcast.
This is how you know the numbers. The numbers stink. Bispin's like, 1,000 people. No way. Impossible.
Exactly. So listen, if you want to give it a try, if you want to try and stop the reduction in your hair, you know, get rid of those bald patches and hang on to it, well, you got to try Keeps.
So here's the deal. All you got to do is go to Keeps.com, KEEPS.com/believe, and you're going to get your first month absolutely free, and plans start as low as $10 a month. So this isn't even expensive, but your first month free, Keeps.com, KEEPS.com/believe. Go there, grab some new hair or grow your old hair. Keep your hair. Fuck you all. I'm dying inside. My hair's gone forever. All right. Switching gears. What do you want to talk about next here?
Well, I was going to say, should we bring Harrington in? And because we were going to do hammer and fisting with Harrington on the last show. But, you know, we had a big conflab. We had an internal dialogue on air, live on air. Just to make me look stupid, Harrington has your back regardless of what the situation is. But we said hammer fisting with Harrington will be on Thursday. So I guess hammer fisting with Harrington. Are you there, Harrington? And can you hammer fist me? I mean, hammer fist Lewis. Just don't hammer fist anybody. Just bring the topics.
That is, you're putting a lot on my shoulders here, guys. So yeah, first up, Zabit blasts Yair Rodriguez after learning that he will not be fighting him later this month. He said, "It's funny, I signed the bout agreement a few weeks ago. Yair never did. Either the UFC is playing games or Yair has no balls." Which one do you guys think it is, Michael Bisping?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't want to speak badly about Yair. He's a tremendous fighter, but the thing that makes it kind of look bad for Yair is that I believe the fight was already booked 2 times before, correct? And I think the UFC might have actually, did they suspend him or like take him out or let him go for a while? Yeah, Rodriguez, because he refused to fight or something like that. I'm a little shaky on the details, but I feel like I'm not a million miles away. Then he came back. Go ahead, Harrington.
I believe it was that Zabit fight the first time, yeah. Actually. He turned down the fight and the UFC cut ties with him. They eventually brought him back and he went on a nice little tear there.
Yeah, so it looks bad. It looks bad on the surface, but let's be honest, injuries do happen. They do happen. And just because there's that backstory, that's what complicates it. That's what makes it look bad. Anyway, this is hammer fisting. It's quick hittery style, Lewis.
Well, hold on. Lewis, oh, J.
There's
Gomez.
More.
Yeah, I wanted to follow this up with Lewis. Yair Rodriguez responded. He said, sit down and wait for me the way you've been waiting. You will get a real good taste of my Mexican ball soon enough. And since when did you become a shit talker? Is that your manager? Either way, you'll both wait for me like the little dogs you are, tongue out and begging.
Ooh.
Do you agree, Lewis J. Gomez, should Zabit wait for that Yair fight in November or October?
Well, now he should. After reading that comment, I want to see this fight. These guys are talking shit. It's heating up. It's good. I don't think that Yair is afraid of Zabit. I think that once you get to this level in mixed martial arts, I don't think fear is something that you're seeing too often out of many fighters. I think most fighters, to even get to that level, they have to believe that they could beat any man alive. I know Michael Bisping, when he was competing with seriousness, we'd be sitting there, he'd be like, no, I'll beat any heavyweight in the world, any fucking man standing in front of me, I will beat it. Like, he had it, like, in his head, and it was completely 100% convinced of it, no matter how big. I'm not saying I disagree.
What do you mean, had? What do you mean, had? I still fucking got it, baby boy. I still got it. I was in the gym this morning. In fact, and Harrington, and great job on bringing the fire today. I'm gonna expand on that a little bit further because Kelvin Kattar jumps into the mix, didn't he? And he offered to fight Zabit as well. And I got to say, while we're on this whole thing of accepting matches and whatnot, and you talking about not having fear, Lewis, it kind of ties in. Kelvin Kattar, I got to say, this man has my respect because the last person to beat Kelvin Kattar was Zabit by decision, and then Kelvin goes off, he wins his main event against Dan Ige. Nothing but big things ahead for him. And what does he do? He offers to step in on short notice against Zabit, the last man to beat him. That's a fucking gangster move.
Yeah, yes, but yes, he sort of needs to do it.
That's a gangster move.
So, yes, fine. I'll give it gangster. You, yes, fine. But I'm just saying, like, he's sort of, I understand why he would do that. Of course, he thinks he could beat him. And, you know, you lose that. You want to avenge those losses. You know, at one point, you know, he knows he's going to have to face him anyway. Fuck it. I say, dude, if you believe you can beat any man in the world, you know.
Harrington, hammer fist me.
All right. Vincente. Vincente Luque picked up a big win this weekend, scoring the TKO over Randy Brown. After the fight, he called for a scrap with Nate Diaz. Michael Bisping, what do you think about that fight?
Yeah, I love what he's doing, and fair enough. I always say you got to have somebody to call out, but I think Vincente Luque entered the rankings with that win at the weekend at either number 10 or number 15, I think it was. I saw on his teammate Gilbert Burns' Instagram, he was very proud of his teammate getting a ranking, a number beside his name, which was beautiful to see. What was that number, Harrington?
He's currently ranked number 10.
Yeah, number 10. That's amazing. And Vincente Luque is the real deal as well. He just doesn't have the star power, you know, to attract somebody like a Nate Diaz. What he's doing, but I don't think Nate Diaz is going to take that fight. That's a very, very tough fight for Nate Diaz. Without the fan recognition, I don't see that fight happening anytime soon.
What is Nate Diaz ranked?
Probably not.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, yeah, I guess, yeah, Nate hasn't fought in a while. Obviously, everyone wants to fight Nate Diaz. There's a few people you can call out, and it's like, you know, massive fight. But, you know, the truth is there's no upside for Nate Diaz to take that fight at all.
So I was going to follow up on this. Vincente Luque is ranked number 10. Nate Diaz is ranked number 12. Vincente Luque said that he understands it would be going down, in the rankings for him, but he does appreciate the star power. Six performance of the night
it's
bonuses.
It's not about that. It's not about that with Nate Diaz right now. Nate Diaz is a star. He's one of those guys that goes against the mold. He spikes, you know, the viewership whenever he's on. He's a fucking legit star, okay? Yeah. He's not looking at it from a ranking perspective. Go, well, I'm number 12. He's 10. That's a viable thing. No, he wants big fights. He wants money fights. He wants fights that are going to raise his star potential, fights for the BMF belt, or he wants a fight that's going to give him a title shot. Vincente Luque, as I know, as I said, is an incredibly tough fight for anyone in the division. Certainly championship material doesn't tick any of those boxes, unfortunately, for Nate Diaz.
Bisping, do you think he should, though? Do you think he should maybe say, I need to get back there and win, fight the guys that make sense, that are ranked comparably? Because it is a sport, so let's not forget that it is a sport.
Yeah.
And look, my answer to that is no. I think Nate's a star. He probably only has a few fights left in his career. He's sort of got to pick and choose which ones he's going to fight. And I don't think Vincente Luque is on the, on the chopping block. But what do you think? I mean, do you think it won't, what is Nate to do?
I mean, listen, far be it from me to be advising Nate Diaz, but to answer the question, I think he's just got to be more active. I mean, everybody wants to see Nate Diaz fight more and Nick Diaz, but I think that's, we can all forget about that one. He had two fights, I think, Diaz, right, in 2019, and then he hasn't fought this year. Just get busier. You've only got one career. You've got a short amount of time. Get in, have some fights, make some money, set yourself up for the rest of your life, and make the most of your opportunity. That's what I'd like to see. And maybe someone like Vicente Luque to go out there to beat a contender. Yeah, and then, you know, he's in those conversations, but, you know, Diaz will always be a star. Harrington, hammer fist.
Speaking of star power, formerly one of the biggest stars in the sport, Anderson Silva has another guy calling him out. Anthony Pettis has doubled down, says he wants to fight at 185 at UFC 254. Luis J. Gomez, do you think that's a good fight for Anderson Silva and Anthony Pettis?
When you say doubled down, that means he's doubling his weight? Is that what it is? Yes. I mean, no, there's no reason for Anderson Silva to take that fight at all as well. Like, there's just not much upside. Anderson's another one. We're just talking about Nate Diaz, Nick Diaz, sort of the fights that they're going to pick and choose. Anderson's got a couple fights left at best. No, Anderson should, if he's going to do quote unquote super fights with guys from different weight classes, I think it should be other legends. Not saying that Anthony Pettis isn't a future Hall of Famer or legend or any of that. He very well might be. It's not disrespect to Anthony Pettis, but it's just a really small guy who spent most of his career at 145 coming up to fight Anderson. There's just, you know,
yeah.
If Anderson wins, what, like, okay, you beat up a guy who should be fighting at 145 pounds.
Yeah, it's a lose-lose situation for him. For Anthony Pettis, of course, and to your point again, Lewis, yeah, of course Anthony Pettis will be in the Hall of Fame. He's a legend of the sport, former champion, WEC champ, all that good stuff. But as you said, he is the smaller guy, by far the smaller guy. Fought for quite a while at 145. To be fighting Anderson at 185, he's jumping up. All right, I think his last couple of fights were at 170, to be fair. But still, he's still a smaller guy. And Anderson's a big 185er. When I squared up with Anderson, when I fought him, I was like, holy shit, he's tall, he's long, and he's still fast, and he's still got it. And I think when you just see the disparity of them two standing side by side, it wouldn't do Anderson Silva any favors. I understand why Pettis is calling that, and I admire him, because obviously he's probably a guy as well that's, you know, in the twilight of his career. He wants the biggest fights. He wants those name brands on his record, on his resume, and the earning potential that goes with it. I'm just not sure it's going to be successful, but I like what he's doing. Fair play.
Michael Bisping, your friend Daniel Cormier, says that he thinks the Miocic trilogy will be what defines his career, not his rivalry with John Jones. Do you agree with Cormier?
To a certain degree. I think whenever you think about Daniel Cormier, you're always going to think of John Jones. You're always going to think of that bad blood. And was it three fights they had or two?
Two fights,
he lost them both. But still, you know, that was his biggest rival. Now he's a heavyweight. He's got the new biggest rival, Stipe Miocic. They're saying whoever wins this fight on Saturday is the greatest heavyweight of all time. Incidentally, I saw a bit of a podcast the other day with Dan Hardy on it, and he was disagreeing, and he was listing all the top 10 heavyweights of all time. And he had Daniel Cormier in there at number 10. And I think he had Stipe, I don't know, middle of the pack.
Number one?
I don't fucking know. I didn't watch it that long. I just saw the inflammatory clickbait bit. I was like, oh, say, I saw the bit where he's talking shit about DC. That'll do me. Listen, come on. Whoever wins this is going to be the champ. It will have won two out of the three. Stipe, the saying is he's the man that defended the belt the most against stellar competition.
Yeah.
I think this will be his legacy, his defining legacy. Certainly if DC retires after this one, which he's been talking about for a long time, then yeah, this is what we're going to be known for. Not those fucking fights with John Jones. That was fun. You know, it was great. You know, not for him, but Jones was cheating, whatever you want to do. That was a while ago. It was terrible for DC. He got knocked out and then he cried. Okay? It's probably a night he cares to forget. It was fun. It was great. He's like, not for me, Mike, you fucking prick. Anyway, Lewis, hammerfist.
Oh, shit. I mean, look, you know, DC's legacy, I think, is defined by the fact that he won that 205-pound title. You know, he lost it to who was widely going to be regarded as, you know, the greatest of all time, likely, even though he fucking cheated. And purists know that John Jones cheated in those fights. So I think that DC, he was sort of, those losses were, they have asterisks. He was exonerated from sort of the embarrassment of those losses because Jones, I don't think, was coming to the table and fighting fair. And then he moved up and said, let me move past it. And DC also defining his legacy, because I'm a big fan of DC. And when we've had him on the show, he's been great. How he carries himself, as a broadcaster, podcaster, outside of the cage, a level of dignity, a father, coach. These are all things that go into the entire mix, right? And I watched it with you, and I think your legacy is defined much more so than just winning that title. I think everything went into that mix as well. And I think when the smoke clears, DC is going to go down as possibly the greatest heavyweight of all time. If he wins this title, without a doubt, I think he'll go down as the greatest heavyweight of all time, because to come back from that mental block against Jon Jones and then go up and go against what is by definition tougher competition, it takes a lot. And I think DC, it took a lot for him to walk away from that Jon Jones horse shit. And, you know, I think the whole picture, champ, moving up to heavyweight, ending his career on a high, that, you know, ideally will be what defines his legacy, not a couple losses that I think have asterisks on them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And everything you said there, I mean, DC, I mean, you got to remember, here's a guy that's, you know, a two-weight division champion at one point. He has a bunch of businesses. He commentates for the UFC, and he's still out there multiple times per week coaching kids' wrestling teams. Mm. You know what I mean? That tells you about this man. You know, that's a special individual. A lot of people with the amount of fame and cash. Make no mistake, DC's a rich motherfucker. You're talking about me? You're talking about me?
You're a three-quarter mansion.
Bro, I'm fucking, we're fighting eviction notices constantly in this house. Do you know what I mean? This is all smoke and mirrors, or as we say in the UK, fur coat and no knickers. You know what I mean? I got the fur coat on, but underneath it, I've got nothing on because I can't afford it. This is all smoke and mirrors. DC is fucking loaded, okay? He's making millions of dollars per fight, smashing it everywhere. He's got barbershops, he's got restaurants.
Barbershops. That's, he doesn't even know that. Mike's just racist and he assumes.
He has barbershops. He has a number of barbershops. He has a number of restaurants. Okay. Stop throwing in that word racist. It's bad in this day and age. It's not tittle tattle. It is not something to joke about. But the point I'm making is, guys, making bank, bro. And he's still going up and giving his time to coach little kids. All right, he's getting paid a lot for that as well. Let's be honest. That wrestling program he has, I think they have hundreds of kids on the program and they all pay a monthly due. So again, he's a smart businessman.
You know, he's a real scumbag. Never mind. We take it all back. No, he really is great. And yeah, the legacy thing, the Jon Jones thing, you know, I've moved past it. I, you know, when I looked at that, I was like, oh yeah, Jon Jones, who the fuck knows what he did? I'm annoyed as a pure MMA fan, as somebody who's a really big fan of the sport. I'm annoyed that Jon Jones was cheating. I'm annoyed because I feel like he could have been like, I don't think he needed to. Maybe, I don't know. You know, he knows better than anybody else, but he sort of threw these, like, he just sort of fucked up the whole DC thing. It just sucks that you can't with a clear conscience say Jon Jones is number one pound for pound greatest fighter of all time.
Yeah, that is annoying. Certainly for Jon Jones and for fans, whenever this debate comes up, because it's always all the asterisks talk. You know what I mean? So it's hard to really get that defined. If it wasn't for all that bullshit, Jon Jones would be the greatest and there wouldn't even be a conversation, let's be honest. But here's the thing, that because DC's been talking about retiring for a long time. He struggled with his back. He had back surgery recently. Excuse me. And I know it was bad. Some of the people at the UFC were telling me, said, oh, when DC was commentating last year, he was in fucking agony. When he wasn't talking on air, he was lying down, face down on the floor, howling in pain. So his back was really bad. That's been taken care of. And then he's talking about retiring. But you know, Dana's going to, Dana said recently, he said, listen, whenever people start talking about retirement, you know, I'm like, well, they should retire. Is it with DC? I don't know. He doesn't look like he's ready to retire. He's still competing and they love DC. And obviously he's a big fucking star as well. They're going to try and make that third fight with Jon Jones at heavyweight. And if I'm DC, as the fucking, the competitor that he is, as the Olympic athlete, as the money hungry shyster that he is, he's going to take that fight because he needs more millions. All the money that DC has, isn't it enough? He's going to take that third fight. And could you imagine if he was to beat Jon Jones at heavyweight, knock him out? I mean, that is the way to do it, and then walk off into the sunshine.
Or if he loses to Jon Jones, that defines it. I'll say, if he loses to Jon Jones at heavyweight, that would clearly define his legacy.
The guy that couldn't beat Jon Jones. Hey, who's DC? Where's the guy that couldn't beat? Yeah, hold on. Double champ, Olympian, wrestling coach to hundreds of little high-paying students. No, you're known as the man that could have beat John Jones. You're right.
I just had a Braveheart speech about how I respect him from walking away from the John Jones beef, and fucking how he's, you know, he doesn't need that win, and then he goes back and fights John Jones at heavyweight and loses. God forbid. That would literally be the worst way to end his career.
It really would. Harrington, what else you got, buddy?
Okay, Jorge Masvidal suffered his second defeat in the last month, dropping a cornhole match to Cody Henderson. After the bout, he said that his opponent is on Adderall and PEDs. Luis J. Gomez, do you think he has a case if his opponent is clean to get on the board in the trilogy?
Hold on, before you say anything, Luis, you have to see what this guy looks like. Oh, I've seen the footage. He looks like the type that's on Adderall.
Yeah, look, here's the thing. I've taken Adderall before. You give me some Adderall and give me a cornhole fucking beanbag, I'm getting it in that hole every time, baby boy. So if they test out this guy, Cody Henderson, I think that, yeah, they should maybe strip him of that win and we could award Masvidal the BMF Cornhole Championship.
That's awesome, isn't it? He's accusing him of being on Adderall and steroids. It's pretty funny. Come on, let's be honest. A fair play to Masvidal. What a good sport for doing that.
I have a question.
Please.
Because I can't tell. Was all the pushing and shit serious, or were they just fucking around?
No, come on. They got to be messing around. Now, that's Masvidal's brand. That's what he will do. Yeah, he will go to fight. But I don't think he's going to pick on Mr. Adderall, Specky Four Eyes. I'm going to beat you up.
Mr. Adderall pushed him because he pulled his mask up at they did like a stare down. He pulled his mask up and Mr. Adderall, Cody Henderson, pushed him. And I was like, what? And then I was like, I just saw the clip. So I'm assuming it was just a work and they were fucking around.
So that's his legacy now. He was a cornhole champion, but now his legacy is Mr. Adderall. Have a bit of respect for the hours that this man has put into slave, plying his craft, honing his skills, standing in a backyard, throwing a bag, a bean bag, through the air to land on a random piece of wood and get it in that hole. That's serious skill. Harrington, go ahead.
Well, devil's advocate, Mike, if you're on that much Adderall, it's not that hard to focus on cornhole.
Yeah, no, it really isn't. It really isn't. That's it. Well done to Masvidal. Anything else, Harrington?
I have one more story I think you guys might be interested in. Ben Askren has hinted at the possibility that he might not be fully retired after all. He said, here's the deal. I would never make a full-fledged, like, hey, I'm going to go chase the title type of comeback, but I love combat. I enjoy wrestling. I enjoy fighting so much. So if there's a good money fight for me and the right opponent is there, let's have some fun. Luis J. Gomez, who is the dream opponent for Ben Askren's one last fight?
The dream opponent for Ben Askren's one last fight? Give it to Anthony Pettis. Give him something. Pettis wants a good fight. That's the one, Pettis. You get it. Ben
That's
Askren comes out of retirement. He's a wrestler. You're a striker. You know, that's a good fight for Ben Askren. But, yeah, I don't think Ben Askren and I'm a fan of Ben Askren, but I don't think he's going to be able to compete with the toughest guys in the UFC.
Just let it go. Let it go. Let it go. I love Ben. He's a great guy. He came on our podcast. Awesome personality. Yeah, very, very, very smart guy. Very smart guy. Very funny. And he garnered a lot of attention when he was in the UFC. But that attention was because he was undefeated, came to the UFC. And, you know, he had some bad losses. I mean, the poor guy. It wasn't his fault. That thing with Masvidal. I mean, yeah, it was great what Masvidal did. You know what I mean? But I think if they fought 9 times out of 10, or if they fought another 9 times, he isn't going to do that. You know, yeah. I'm not saying Masvidal couldn't beat him. I'm just saying that fucking he wouldn't ever pull off a 5-second knockout ever again. I mean, that takes... you got to swallow a lot of pride, man. I've been finished before, but I've never been finished in 5 seconds. I mean, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Well, the funny part is being finished is being you're really only finished in a 2-second exchange. You know, whatever, whether you're finished 10 minutes into the fight or 5 seconds into the fight, it's just bad luck in that moment. He really just, you're just
getting
caught.
Yeah, but let me tell you, as a fighter, do you know what I mean? For in terms of pride, if you are going to get knocked out, let's say God comes down and he whispers on your ear and says, hey, I'm monitoring this MMA fight, as every MMA fighter seems to think, God is invested in these fights. And I'm loves just going to let you, loves MMA, loves the guy that's winning, doesn't love the guy that's losing. Sorry, that's what it seems to say. And if God said to him, listen, bud, I'm just going to level with you. You're getting knocked out in this fight. You're going to get knocked out. Any fighter on the planet, Lewis, would say, okay, well, knock me out in the last minute of the last round. 100%.
No way.
You don't want to be finished in the first 5 seconds. That's embarrassing.
I want to get paid quickly. I don't want to have my fucking beat. I don't want to beat up. My legs are all beat up. My bones are bruised. My hands hurt. A three-round war to just get knocked out at the end of it.
Nah. Look,
I would take – this is why I'm not a fighter. This is why I'm a pussy. This is why I'm a pussy. This is between me and you because I'm like, knock me out in 4 seconds. Oh, shit. I didn't even feel it. I just saw him running across the cage. I was like, oh, he's running at me.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah, and then you'll be like Ben Askren, retired. You get no follow-up fight. You get mocked. You don't get respect. You're like, yeah, well, maybe you shouldn't have been in the UFC in the first place. Where on the flip side, you got three rounds. You get a fucking war. You're black and blue. There's blood everywhere. Everyone's on the feet. They're clapping. And in the final exchange, you get knocked out. They're like, yeah, he went out on his shield. That's the way to go. That's the honorable death.
And then they're going to have to take that shield. They're going to melt it down, put it into your other knee that you have to have replaced because you had too many of those fucking wars.
Oh, God. Hey, I've got a question for you. I've got a question. We're going to finish this show in a moment, I'm assuming, right? All right, let's finish on this.
I got a little bit of time. My niece, they're watching a movie. I'm not really super rushed.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought it was time's up time. No, so I went to see my doctor yesterday. Let me ask you this, Lewis. He's a little self-indulgent, so I apologize. I've been talking about a knee replacement, and he's given me some options. He said, we can give you injections every week for the next 5 weeks, and weeks 4 and 5 will also give you some PRP, platelet-rich plasma.
You did this in the past.
I did it on my left treatment.
Yeah, I remember.
And it did nothing.
Yeah.
It did nothing. They took fat from my stomach and injected it into my knee. They did all kinds of things on my left knee, and none of it fucking worked. Eventually, I got a knee replacement, and that fixed it. Now they're saying...
I'm sorry. I mean to keep cutting you off, because I just... How is your knee feeling, the one that was replaced? Like, how do you feel with it?
Yeah. There's no pain. I got full range of motion. It's all great. I can't run on it. It feels weird because it is a mechanical knee. It is a metal knee. It does clunk and click every time I step. So that is weird. And unfortunately, at some point, 15, 20 years, they'll have to do another one. They'll have to replace it because the parts wear out. You know what I'm saying? Wear and tear. They'll have to go in there and replace the replaced knee. Now, so they don't want to do it on the other one. They're like, they don't want to give me 2 replaced knees. That means down the line, that's going to be 2 lots of replacements again, 2 revisions, as they call it. And then also there's a potential for infection. He said, listen, last time, you know, you got away with it, great. But there is a high infection rate. And if you get infected, Mike, we're going to go in there. We're going to take that knee out. We're going to put another knee in. You're going to be in the hospital for about 10 days on antibiotics through a drip. He said, it's a bad situation. Your femur can crack. He said, there's all kinds of
complications. And you already flipped the coin once and you landed on heads.
Yeah. So you're like, well, last time it went perfect. And he's like, well, it doesn't go like that every fucking time. I'm like, well, let's just make sure it does. Anyway, so he says, here's the scenario that I'm in. He said, so what we can do is we can do these injections for 5 weeks. I said, well, how much pain relief will that buy me? Is it 8 to 12 months? So I could take a chance, right? Have these injections for the next 5 weeks and then potentially be pain-free for 8 to 12 months and then have the knee replacement.
But you're doing the replacement no matter what for another two.
Or I can do the knee replacement now, right? Where I have a few weeks off work. I'm not working for the UFC again for a few weeks. So I'm not going to lose any money if I do it now. We're living through a pandemic. It's lockdown. So, you know, you got to take that into consideration. Next year, I might be fucking, hopefully someone gives a shit. Maybe I'm filming a movie somewhere, but no, I got to have a knee replacement. You see what I'm saying? So I feel like now is the time, but the doctor was like, now is not the time. I have spoken to my colleagues and they say to wait, don't do the knee replacement yet. He said, if you ultimately say you want to do it, you're the patient. I know what's best. If you're saying the pain is too much, then I'll do it. But I advise against it. What would you do, Lewis?
So the one thing, the disconnect that I have is, are you going to have to get this knee replacement surgery no matter what? Or is there a chance that after you get these injections and platelet replacement therapy that your knee is going to regenerate and somehow you're not going to need the replacement?
No, I've got heavy arthritis. You can see the bone being worn away. When I got the meniscus repaired recently, they took some photographs and they showed me patches on the bone where the bone on bone is really scraping. You know, if you have an ACL tear, an MCL, PCL, stuff like that, a meniscus, they can repair that. They can fix that. But when it's arthritis through wear and tear and all the absorption, what do you call it? You have shock absorbers, if you will, the meniscus and all the cartilage.
Cartilage.
Yeah, yeah. All that's worn away. All that's gone. So now it's just bone on bone. There's nothing they can do for that. other right. than a knee replacement. So down the line, I'm going to have to have it.
Why did the doctor say, wait, I don't understand. What was his?
Because it's not as progressed and not as advanced as the other knee. Do you know what I'm saying? Anyway, long story short, here's the quandary that I'm in. Do I say, hey, doc, yeah, slice me open. It's going to double. My leg swelled up twice the size last time. It was a miserable 3 months. It was one of the worst experiences of my life. You know what I mean? I'm not looking forward to doing it, but I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to text him after this show. I've got to give him an answer.
You sound like you're convincing yourself to just do it now and get it over with because of the quarantine, the downtime. It's just, yeah, you know, you want to be active. It sucks. I feel bad for you.
The doctor is talking me out of doing it, and Rebecca's talking me into doing it.
Well, she doesn't care. She's just trying to, she hopes you die. She just wants all the Bisping riches.
I'm like, what is going on, babe? The doctor, the very intelligent people that have dedicated their life to this science say not to do it. He's conferred with colleagues. They say not to do it. She's like, get it done.
Just you know what it is? Done. She also just fell off a horse, so she might be dealing with brain trauma. So she's just not speaking clearly right now.
He has not shut up about falling off that fucking horse. I've got a bad hip. I'm at a bad hip, really. I've got a bad neck, bad knee, whatever. Anything else you want to chat about before we go then, Lewis? Any questions, perhaps?
I don't know if we had any questions prepped, but if you guys want, real quick, let me do plugs real quick before we get out of here. If you love the show, iTunes, leave us a 5-star ranking and a positive review. We love that. Go subscribe to the YouTube channel. Just search Believe You Me Podcast or Michael Bisping Podcast on YouTube. Hit the notification button. You get all the latest episodes live. And also, if you want the entire On Demand library ad-free and uncensored, go to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get a 14-day free trial. And if you want to send in any fan questions or art or anything, bympod@gmail.com is the email address. Please send us all that stuff. We always do fan questions now on Mondays, the new format of the very, very consistent Believe You Me podcast.
Well, it's nice to know this. So, right. So there is no questions because Mondays are questions. Thursdays are hammer fisting. Okay. All right. I thought it was more of a fluid situation. We just roll with the punches, but okay. All right. I've been told I'm in my place. All right.
You're the man, Michael. Look, have fun. Enjoy yourself. I got to leave here in a little bit. I'm meeting up with my.
Listen to this. This is my mom. Hold on. Listen to this. Hello, mom.
Are you sleeping?
No, I can't see you, mom. It's a phone call. It's not a video call. Oh, hold on. Let me call you right back. I'm just finishing my podcast. Hold on. The phone calls never go well. And even when she calls me and I answer, she sounds shocked. So, hello? I'm like, how are you shocked at this? You called me. Hello? Who is this? I'm like, again, you called me. You should know who this is. And then she just calls there. She's like, can you see me? I'm like, it's not a video call, mom. It's not a video call. Anyway, I better call my mom back. In the meantime, look after yourselves. Good fights this weekend. Enjoy them. Chris Weidman will be back in action trying to get a win, a much needed win. And I wish him the best. Chris Weidman's been around for the sport for a long time. He's a great fighter as well. So I wish him the best. Sugar Sean O'Malley, you are the man fighting next week. Chito Vera, that's going to be awesome. Lewis, you're pretty good yourself as well.
I'm not bad, my friend. Mr. Bisping, have fun. Enjoy your day. Tell your mom I said hello. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And we'll check you guys on Monday. Believe you me.